and this is Chester's D Radio. It's the first Thursday of the month. That means it's our legal hour, and I'm very pleased to say from Oliver & Co. this month, it's Laura Corrigan joining me in the studio, and you look after conveyancing, Laura.
I do, yes. Well, like in the conveyancing department, Oliver & Co. It's a great department to be in.
It's lovely to see you. You've got a smile from ear to ear. So you obviously love your job, or you love being on the radio, one of the two. I don't know which it is. Maybe both. Maybe both. Brilliant. So conveyancing, I mean, what is, in a nutshell, what is conveyancing? What does it cover? What does it encompass?
Yeah, so conveyancing, so it's the process of buying, selling, remortgaging and transferring property from one person to another, or from various people to other various people.
And is it complicated because, obviously, you know, when you're buying a piece of land and property, you know, it's got to be properly legally registered. Is that the big issue?
Yeah, it can be. Most property transactions that we deal with are straightforward, but you'll always get the odd one that has its difficulties, and we try to minimise those for our clients as much as possible, really.
Right. Well, we'll come on and talk about one or two examples of difficult situations you've encountered in a few minutes' time. But if it's so straightforward, why does it take so long?
It doesn't take so long.
Try telling the person that wants to move.
Not with us, not with Oliver & Co. No, it can do, obviously. So if it's a straightforward transaction, then it can take a couple of weeks if everything falls into line.
That quickly, 2 weeks?
Yeah, because we can, well, with a remortgage, all you need to get is, you know, a mortgage offer, a redemption statement, and away you go. But then if you're buying something that's a lot more complex, that's where the difficulties can come in.
Right, okay. And we'll come on to that in a bit. We'll hear from the M people in just a second, then we'll talk in a little more detail about conveyancing and some of the problems that you might encounter and how Laura can sort them all out for you. Laura Corrigan here from Oliver & Co. And this is Chester's D Radio. And we're back with Laura Corrigan, a solicitor from Oliver & Co, works in the conveyancing department. And you briefly mentioned before that song, Laura, what conveyancing is and, you know, the sort of things you have to get involved with. What types of clients do you find that you're working with usually? What types of clients come to you and say, I need some help?
Yeah, so there's loads of different types of clients that we help, not only in and around Chester, but also nationwide. So we deal with first-time buyers, people who are selling via a probate sale, and that's where someone's, you know, sadly passed away. Families who are upsizing, couples downsizing, people growing their buy-to-let portfolio, landlords who are also selling off that portfolio.
So there's a lot of people in a lot of different situations there. Is your approach different according to the circumstance, or is the basics of conveyancing the same?
The basics are the same. I mean, we will always help clients, you know, however, how much hand-holding they might need. So, for example, first-time buyers who've never done the process before might need a little bit more assistance with the process, as opposed to somebody who is a portfolio landlord, who has multiple properties, who's buying, selling, remortgaging quite frequently.
Mm. I remember having to fill out an awful lot of very big forms with all sorts of information. What's the purpose of those?
So they vary. On a sale, you'll typically have to just sign two documents, which is a contract and a transfer, and also have to fill out information about the property. So, you know, whether you've had any extensions, kind of what items you're leaving in the house, things like that. So there is a lot of form filling. Luckily, at Oliver & Co, we do that all electronically. Can obviously still do paper copies for our older clients or people who don't fancy doing things online. But we try and make the process as smooth as possible, so you're not sat there with a half a tree.
Well, I was.
Filling out all that information.
Literally, are you going to leave the light bulb in the front room? Yeah. Are you going to leave the light bulb in the guest room? Of course I am.
Yeah, it can be a bit pedantic sometimes, can't it?
I thought it did seem to be much more detailed than I thought. I mean, there's times, I guess, where, you know, it just goes so smoothly, the client can't believe it and you can't believe it. And there's other times when things just crop up.
Yeah.
Causing problems all the way down the line. What sort of time scale are we looking at for if you were selling a house and buying another one? And most people have to do that on the same day.
Yeah.
What sort of time scale on average would we be looking at?
So it really just depends on the process. I know that's a really rubbish answer. We kind of say on a purchase, 8 to 12 weeks from receiving contract. In reality, that can be shortened down quite significantly. So the main thing that are going to cause delays is ordering searches. So that's your environmental, your drainage and your local search. They can take quite a while because they're coming from a third party. The other thing that can take quite a while is inquiries. So on a sale, you'll receive inquiries from the buyer's solicitors, and you have to report those back to the client. They have to fill them out. They might need to, you know, find those documentations from the extension they did 20 years ago. So that can take a little while. And then again, if you're purchasing, the seller's solicitors will also need to obtain that from the seller. So, you know, the seller might be away on holiday for 2 weeks, and that can cause delays. But it's just about, you know, making sure that the pressure's on the whole time to try and get it through as quick as possible.
So obviously once a sale has been agreed, the person concerned, your client, just wants to move out of their house and move into their, exactly, their new property, don't they?
Exactly, but we've got to make sure that everything is right and we've not missed anything, because, you know, if you come sell that property in 5 years' time and there's information that was missed because you were rushing, or, you know, because something was missed, then that's quite significant and it could stop you potentially selling the property. So we need to make sure we're doing everything really carefully, and making sure we're very thorough with what we're doing.
And you have to approach the local authority, don't you? They have to get involved as well, and then not always with respect the speediest.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, the local search, you can get desktop searches from search providers. Depending on which lender you're with, you might have to get a search direct from the council. That can take quite a bit of time. And then sometimes if you've had building works done and you've not had completion certificates, you might need to approach the council to obtain those as well, which again can take a little bit of time.
And what sort of things do you come across quite frequently that just sort of holds the whole process up?
I'd say it's really just the speed of the buyers and the sellers answering inquiries. Solicitors normally, when they get those inquiries back from the client, will ping them over to us in an email. We can report back to the client, and away we go. But you know, you might get some sticking points where, you know, people say, I haven't got that documentation. We can offer an indemnity policy, and you might need to have a look at indemnity policies to see if it's going to protect you for things like, you know, building regulations, planning permission, things like that. So that's really the only thing.
So what is an indemnity policy? What does that do?
So an indemnity policy, so say for example, you replace a window, that's probably a good one to use. You replace a window and you've not had a fender certificate, and you're coming to sell your house, and the buyer comes along and says, I want a copy of that fender certificate, and you go, I've not got it, I've lost it, I've shredded it by mistake, whatever. You can get an indemnity policy in place that basically covers you. So it doesn't cover you if the window, for example, was faulty or anything like that, but if the council came along and said, you know, where's the certificate for this window? You could say, I don't have one, but I've got this indemnity policy. And it covers you for any legal proceedings if the council wanted to come along and, you know, take the window out, for example.
Right, so it's dotting I's and crossing T's,
yeah,
really. Which I guess that's the role of a solicitor, isn't it? And the difference between freehold and leasehold, does that have an effect on the length of time it takes to conduct your conveyancing?
It can do. Leasehold properties, there's normally a lot more information involved, so you'll need to get things like management packs, you'll need to get additional sets of office copies. There might be two management companies involved, which we've got to liaise with, obtain copies, check for things like ground rent and service charge. So yeah, it can add to the process. Again, if you've got a seller that's quite on it, you know, they might have all the information readily available, and you can just go to the management company who will send you the pack and you review it and away we go. But sometimes if the seller themselves don't really know, you know, oh, I don't know who my managing agent is, I haven't paid ground rent before, I don't know what that is, it can delay the process while we're fact finding.
Right, I would imagine it's a lot more complicated with leasehold than freehold. Yeah. And presumably better for, I mean, would you ever advise a client to just buy a freehold and forget leasehold?
There's different options for both. I mean, a lot of properties are freehold.
Most are, aren't they? On the open market?
Yeah, most are. Obviously flats and things won't be freehold. There'll be a leasehold and there will be a freeholder. For example, my brother just bought a property and it had a freehold and two leasehold titles. So a little bit, you know, out of the order. And it's just a normal house.
Good job he knows a convincing solicitor, isn't it, your brother?
So it can be, you know, you get these title deeds sometimes and you go, gosh, I didn't even realise it was leasehold. And then we have to do a bit more fact finding and try and help the client. So for example, in my brother's case, it's a freehold and a leasehold. What we're planning to do is merge the titles, so it will just be a freehold property.
Right, okay. That sounds complicated, but I'm sure...
It's not.
You've got it. You big sister or little sister?
Little sister.
Little sister's got this nailed, haven't you, for him?
Yeah.
Okay, great. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about the conveyancing process with Laura Corrigan, going to hear solicitor for Oliver & Co. Works in the conveyancing department. And just before that song, we were talking about the difference between freehold and leasehold. And you were saying, you know, most flats are leasehold. other types of property can be leasehold. It's perhaps easier or less complicated, the process, if you're conveying a freehold property. That's correct,
yeah,
isn't
that's
it?
Right, yeah.
But sometimes people aren't sure what they've actually committed to buying, are they?
No, not all the time. So normally estate agents are really good at advising clients whether it's a freehold or a leasehold property. Or like I said, in my brother's case, he thought he was buying a freehold and actually it had two leasehold titles.
Mm.
So it wasn't until we kind of obtained the documents and had looked through the lease that we realised that actually there's some quite funny clauses in there that he had to abide by. So one of them in the lease dated 1975 said that
wow
yeah, not that long ago, he said that he couldn't hang laundry out on a Sunday except children's school clothing, which was a bit ironic. So
that's very unusual.
Yeah, it's strange,
yeah.
Isn't it? So,
what did you do there?
Basically, well, I mean, because we're merging the titles from leasehold to freehold, it'll be a freehold property, so the lease will be extinguished anyway. So in reality, it doesn't actually affect him. But sometimes if people are buying a leasehold, they have these old covenants that they do have to abide by. So yeah, sometimes it can be a bit shocking what we get. But it's always interesting.
That's fascinating. So somebody at some point must have been so concerned that people weren't observing the Lord's Day sufficiently that they were trying to, you know,
they thought it necessary to put in the
reduce the opportunity for people to do anything else except for school clothing.
Yeah,
of course,
school clothing's fine.
That's crazy. I love that. I love it. Now then, we hear a lot in the news about you know, how difficult it is at the moment, cost of living crisis. We know that interest rates have gone up every month for the last goodness knows how many months. We think they're going to go up again at 12 o'clock today. So you know, this is a difficult time, isn't it, for people to first of all get a mortgage, and then if you manage to secure one, to be able to continue to afford the payments.
Yeah, it is. So I mean, as conveyancing solicitors, we act for both the client and the mortgage lender as well. It's not something that everybody knows. So the mortgage lenders expect us to check everything is fine with the property and advise them when it's not. So for example, like you said, if a client's buying a freehold and it actually turns out that it's leasehold, we'd need to tell the lender.
Because lenders are less keen on lending against leasehold properties, aren't they?
Yeah, it's not that, but what they want to do is they need to protect their investment at the end of the day. So if they're, you know, giving a mortgage of £200,000, they need to make sure that it's a suitable investment and that they're going to get that return back. So we have to report to them, you know, things of a, you know, of a strange nature.
Yeah.
So things, you know, if the property's had issues with subsidence, for example, the lender would definitely want to send a valuer out there.
Well, I wouldn't have thought the buyer would want to buy it.
No, not always, but if it's historic subsidence and, you know, they've had the foundations done and it's all fixed, things like that, you know, the lender would send a valuer out and say, yeah, we're satisfied to lend on this occasion, but we have to make them aware of things like that. At the end of the day, this is a lender's investment to lend on the property, so we need to make sure that not only are we satisfying the client's needs, but also the lender's needs as well.
Are you finding that you're getting less work now simply because less people are buying houses because of the current economic situation?
I mean, it is a turbulent time for everybody. We have seen interest rates go from 1% at the start of the year all the way up to 8%. People are having a tough time. There's a lot of people that are looking to remortgage. So people are trying to get equity out of the property for renovation works, or if they're paying rent or their children's rent, something like that. But we've also seen people starting to put mortgages on properties that were previously mortgage free. So trying to free up cash. People are always going to want to buy a property. I think, you know, first time buyers, if you're renting and you're desperate to get onto the property ladder, whether the interest rate's 1%, 4%, 8%, you know, if you've got that goal to get onto the property ladder, you are going to buy the property. So people are always going to need to buy and sell. It is just a bit of a turbulent time at the moment.
Yeah, and interest rates won't always be this high.
Hopefully not.
Well, they could go higher.
They could. I was just saying before, you know, when I bought my house, we bought and it was 1% interest rate.
Did you fix?
We did fix, but then when we did our product switch, it went to 4%. And I was saying to my mum, I was like, oh my gosh, 4%, that's so high. And she said, when I bought this house, it was 12%. You don't know you've been bought.
Yeah,
so.
That was the 90s, was it?
It was. Yeah.
Interest rates went kind of crazy then. So if somebody is listening thinking, well, I wanted to buy a house, but I'm not sure if this is the right time, what you're saying basically is this is as good a time as any.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get on the property ladder for first time buyers, or if you need to, you know, upsize, downsize, it is what it is. Yeah. That is, I hate saying that quote, but
well, no,
that
I suppose
is the thing.
If you've
got
to do something or you want to do something and it needs to happen now for whatever reason, upsizing, downsizing,
yeah,
then you've just got to acclimatise to what the circumstances are at that moment. And unfortunately, at the moment, it's high interest rates, but slightly lower house prices.
Yeah, we have seen house prices drop since kind of stamp duty holiday. Mm. Stamp duty holiday, the inflation on house prices was crazy. Now they are coming down. It's the whole thing of supply and demand. You know, there was a lot of properties on the market during the stamp duty holiday. They've all been snapped up. So now, you know, house prices are just about starting to settle.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, interest rates are high. House prices are a little bit lower,
yeah,
so you've
swings
just got
and roundabouts, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, well, look, thank you for coming in. It's been really interesting talking to you, and now I know where to go next time I sell my house.
Absolutely.
Don't I? I should be ringing you, Laura. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having us.
Laura Corrigan is a solicitor, works in the conveyancing department at Oliver & Co.